Hello, I'm Kate Chabot. Welcome to an extra edition of the SITREP podcast. On the island of Cyprus, there are just under 100 square miles of sovereign British territory used to keep a very significant UK military presence in a key strategic location. Just 250 miles from Israel, it is on the Middle East's doorstep. It's also a place that vast numbers of British personnel have passed through. The treaty, which gave Cyprus independence, underpins the sovereign bases, but to keep them running as effectively as possible requires a good working relationship with the island and its government. Central to that is the UK Defence Advisor to Cyprus, Colonel Vicky Reid. She's recently spoken to SITREP's Sophie Kakayanis. Their conversation came before the war between Israel and Iran, which saw extra British jets move to Cyprus. But Colonel Reid already had many stories to share about her role, why Cyprus matters so much, and why it's one of the most challenging but fulfilling jobs she's had.
I am the defence advisor to the High Commissioner here in country. I am the MOD's representative here on island in terms of providing advice and guidance on anything we want to deliver from a defence perspective. And I'm also the Chief of Defence Staff's representative on island in terms of the defence bilateral relationship with the Republic of Cyprus.
You alluded to the fact that the job role was a bit different to what you thought it was going to be. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
I hadn't realised how integral defence was to UK interests here on island. And I hadn't realised perhaps the extent of some of the colonialism and the legacy historical relationship here and how that colours interactions today. Everything is looked through a lens of history here, and it was really important that I understood the sensitivity of that as a defence advisor.
And there's a commander of British Forces Cyprus here. How does your role differ to theirs?
So they very much sort of focus on the operational delivery. They enable operational activity from Ireland, and a huge amount, obviously, as you're aware, happens from Cyprus. My role differs because I work in lockstep with the FCDO. So my job is to ensure that across government, we are ensuring that defence interests are protected and projected.
Is there potential for that relationship to be problematic because of the two roles you both have?
Always. The reality is it's, you know, paper, scissors, rank, and it could be like that. It's not like that, though. I mean, the reality is we have a healthy respect for each other. The relationships are really important. We work, you know, there's a lot of symbiotic in terms of what I'm trying to deliver and what he tries to deliver. And a lot of what I will need to represent is generated from British Forces Cyprus. So it's a respectful relationship.
What are some of the significant operations and crises that you've dealt with during your time here?
Well, first of all, I arrived and then we did Op Greenlighter, which was the Turkey and Syria earthquakes. So we sent some of the aid from us and other partners from the bases to support that. That was a really difficult time, as you will recall. I mean, it was a real humanitarian crisis for a large amount of people. So we did what we could to support that, and then we demonstrated our ability to do that. Then we did Polar Bear, which was the Sudan evacuation. I was the crisis manager for that. So worked in an FCDO role, really, but my job was to ensure that we coordinated the FCDO response to that in country, working with our bilateral partners through ESTIA, which is the Cypriot response to a crisis, to be able to bring back a large number of UK citizens, you know, and dual nationals back to Cyprus as a temporary safe location and then onward to back to the UK. So we did that also on behalf of 23 different international partners, incredibly important for UK influencers, again, demonstrating to other partners that we can punch above our weight and coordinate such an evacuation. So that was important. We had a crisis on island with Pila, with a bi-communal village that effectively had conflict there about a road that was being built by the north, and that was hugely contentious. And we had to have a very careful dividing line there between UK interests in terms of managing that crisis within a UN framework, but then also ensuring from a UK citizen perspective. I mean, 20 minutes away from that crisis, and it was big, there were bulldozers running over UN vehicles. There were three UK soldiers that ended up in hospital, two Slovak soldiers that ended up in hospital, UN soldiers. There were tourists on beaches having their holiday. And the two didn't, you know, didn't meet each other, quite rightly. And the reality is we have to protect UK tourism. We have to protect tourism because that's key to the bilateral relationship. So I think that was really important as a crisis to manage that carefully. And we did that. And then you've obviously got Israel Gaza and what that as that unfolded, a huge defence contribution to that. And then the maritime corridor, working first with Cyprus and then with international partners, particularly the US, in terms of delivering that effect and getting aid to very important cause to the humanitarian agencies in Gaza. The small becomes the large very quickly from here. And I think that's really important to understand. I think that, I think from my perspective, we've done, I think, nearly 30 operations since I've been here, you know, ranging from sort of routine operations through to the more, you know, challenging ones, the crises ones. So that's been super interesting professionally, but really hard work to try and ensure that we get that right. And when you've got so many different partners trying to compete for their own interests, that's really hard to ensure that UK gets the leverage and influence that it needs, and that we have the persistent engagement that we need to have here. And those relationships are worth their weight in gold. So if I get it right in when it's peaceful, then when it becomes difficult, you can leverage them in a way that maybe other nations that aren't represented here as a DA aren't able to, because I'm a known quantity. I think Cyprus hadn't realised the complexity here, so working with so many different organisations here has been fascinating. Working with the extent of multi-domain operations has been interesting here. I don't think any job could interest me, could fulfil me, could challenge me as much as this job. I don't know where I could go in the globe that would be such a fascinating country to work. I love Cyprus. I love the people. I love the food. I love the, you know, the family tradition here. I love everything about the country.
And so what characteristics would you say are needed to fill out the role of defence advisor in Cyprus?
Patience, strategic patience, the long game, you know, everything, no matter how fast the UK wants to move, and the MOD has an appetite to move quickly very often. My job is to ensure that we preserve long-term interests and to ensure that what we want to deliver in short-term effect does not impact upon the long-term longevity of that relationship. Because again, trust is really important in this relationship. You know, arguably, that's been a challenge.
Amongst some, a posting to Cyprus is a sunshine posting. To many, it's a holiday destination. How accurate would you say that is?
The reality is Cyprus has many identities. One of those is very firmly as a holiday destination. 1.2 million British tourists come here every year and have a wonderful holiday. The reality is there's a different side to Cyprus that I am invested in, which is where defence interests are represented as a global strategic hub. Geostrategic location is important in terms of its ability to project rapidly capability into the Middle East, which is a huge interest clearly for the UK. The Levant, Eastern Med clearly has taken a strong focus with Houthi activity, and the ability of the maritime space to be important as free trade.
What does it actually mean when it's said that Cyprus is a global strategic hub for the UK?
So it means that we base a lot of capability here. We use it to project regionally capability to a whole host of different places. I mean, who would have thought that a national evacuation from Sudan would use Cyprus as the hub to do that? So the temporary safe location is often Cyprus for a whole host of crises in the NEO space, Lebanon evacuation, Op Highbrow, the Lebanon evacuation in 2006. That was based here in Cyprus. The evacuation from Afghanistan and breakout from Afghanistan in terms of decompression, a lot of that was done in Cyprus. So I think it's really important to understand that we base capability here.
And a lot of those military capabilities are on the sovereign base areas in Cyprus.
They are, yes.
Can you explain the structure of that? Because it's quite unique.
It is unique. And I think it's really important for me as a defence advisor to ensure that I'm sensitive to that. We have a strong British Forces Cyprus footprint, and that will be your resident infantry battalions, of which we have two, and they provide a capability that can project across overseas where required to be able to bolster UK defence interests, but also on Ireland, they're here, you know, to provide a steadying presence on Ireland. We also have obviously a big footprint of Air Force that are able to support defence activity across the region and the globe. And that's all coordinated by headquarters, British Forces Cyprus, with a two-star commander over the top of that as headquarters or British Forces Cyprus commander. And then you've got the Sovereign Base Area Administration, and their job is to effectively administer those sovereign base areas so that there are lots of Cypriot citizens that live on those sovereign base areas. And they should notice no difference than if they lived in the Republic of Cyprus or the sovereign base areas. And it's designed in that way that that can be the case.
Because some people would rather the SBAs didn't exist. How does the UK justify them being here and show what UK defence brings to the island?
I mean, we would say that they provide a real deterrence in terms of, you know, the capability we have there and its ability, high-end capabilities that can project very rapidly across the region. And we've certainly seen that over the last couple of years. I think that's reassuring that we're able to do that. I think from our perspective that we are demonstrating our NATO contribution from here in terms of OpShader and some of the activities we do from here. But also, I think from a Cypriot perspective, the fact you have such a footprint here means that the Cypriots, to some degree, with the US and the UK footprint on Ireland, come under a NATO umbrella without actually being in NATO.
And there's the firefighting as well.
Firefighting, yeah, absolutely. It's a big deal here with the Forestry Commission and others in terms of our ability, you know, to do so. So I think it's really important.
Given the global landscape, would you say it's more important now than ever that the UK has a presence in Cyprus?
Absolutely. The region is really incredibly turbulent, and as has been demonstrated repeatedly, that we've needed to demonstrate force from here to be able to support our partners, particularly the US in the region. And I think that's incredibly important. But I think what Cyprus has represented is a benign nation within a difficult neighbourhood that has its own relationships that ensure it continues to be benign in the way that it operates. But I think Cyprus is projecting itself far more importantly to be an international presence. And we saw with the maritime activity, I mean, the UK operationalised the maritime corridor that we were looking at in December 23. With RFA Lime Bay to be able to work with the Cypriots alongside to be able to project, you know, aid to Gaza. The fact was the UK demonstrated its steadfast partnership with Cyprus by being the partner that stood alongside and said, we will operationalise it. And working with Cyprus, we're able to do so. So we've demonstrated that it's multi-domain here, whether it be in the air, whether it be in the sea, or whether it be on land. We have a robust capability here within a global strategic hub to deliver effect across all three of those domains across the region and the globe.
Looking at our readiness in Cyprus, how effectively can the UK respond to a crisis from the island?
So I think we have to remember that these crises are very rarely purely defence crises. So it has to be a response that's coherent, that's developed across government. And therefore, the UK MOD moves very quickly. We have to. We have to project rapidly force and command and leadership into an environment. So the Joint Forces Headquarters will be here very rapidly. We also have a headquarters that is ready and set with all its infrastructure, ready for Joint Forces Headquarters to just basically plug and play.
Do you ever find yourself in conflict that your military personnel, but working in the High Commission for the Foreign Office when it comes to responding to crises?
Always. The reality is, you know, we speak a different language, we operate very differently. And I guess I'm almost an interpreter sometimes to sort of demonstrate why the UK MOD and defence activity is operating in the way it will. And I will sort of talk about timelines for logistics and how long it takes for us to be able to be ready as a force, for people to become acclimatised, for all the necessary equipment to be issued. So they will understand that. Whereas the FCDO, when they go somewhere, they very rapidly get given what they need and they're able to project when they arrive. But they can only do that because of the security and defence envelope that we provide for them to do so. So I will get pulled into FCDO activity, and I have to be clear in saying, no, I am the expert on Ireland about the bilateral relationship. So it's really important that I am available for key, you know, COBRA meetings or whatever, to be able to feed in how important, you know, certain aspects, how certain ways that we're doing things are landing with Cyprus, so they understand regionally how that's impacting.
You're in a country that's in the European Union, the UK is not. The UK is in NATO, Cyprus is not. You also have the UN on Ireland. Can you explain in a bit more detail how you navigate that?
Of course, Sophie. It's a diplomatic dance, to be honest, because Cyprus is really important. The OPTOSCA force is important. We have a strong footprint as well in United Nations forces in Cyprus headquarters. However, we have to protect the neutrality of the UN. So the UK sort of separates ourselves as a British High Commission from the UN in terms of ensuring that we're not seen to be interfering, because the reality of that is we would get complaints from the north saying that we were showing an unfair interest to one to the Republic of Cyprus potentially, and the Republic of Cyprus would say we're showing an unfair interest to the north. So it's really interesting to see how the UN force works, but we're incredibly proud of that OPTOSCA force, and it's been in place, you know, 60 years effectively, a long time.
Does that then work in terms of the European Union as well, where they're a member and the UK isn't?
So for instance, if you look at the Coalition of the Willing at the moment and some of the conversations that are taking place there, which France and UK are at the leading edge of, Cyprus is part of those conversations. You wouldn't have seen that. Even 5 years ago, I don't think you would have seen that. And now you are seeing Cyprus at the table having conversations on a mutually important issue in terms of Ukraine.
In December 2024, the UK Prime Minister came to Cyprus for the first bilateral meeting in over half a century. How significant was that?
As you can imagine, it was hugely significant. The High Commissioner had only been in post for, I think, about 3 weeks when he arrived, but it was really important to demonstrate the strength of that relationship. That came on the back of an inward visit from President Christodoulidis back to the UK to see our Prime Minister. And at that meeting, they said, you know, President Christodoulidis extended the invitation to the Prime Minister to come back. Who would have thought he would come back so soon? And he did. And I think that was very powerful. The bilateral interaction was important. That was the first visit that he did to ensure that we demonstrated the importance and primacy of that bilateral relationship. So he met the president, they discussed what they needed to discuss, and the National Security Advisor from the UK met with his counterpart, and again, that is important. And I think what was also important was, you know, what that demonstrated about how important Cyprus is to us, and that we care deeply about the relationship and investing in that, not just about our own interests, but about what the bilateral relationship represented and how important that relationship is to our own interests across the region, but also in terms of the longevity of trust as a reliable partner with Cyprus. And the Cypriots want to work with us. The Cypriots like working with the UK, but it's important that we don't take advantage of that, and we understand that Cyprus interests need to be well represented as well, and sometimes, you know, we're not always aligned with that. But I think crisis-wise, we've seen how important Cyprus is to managing those crises.
How do you manage those sorts of crises?
So I think it's about protecting UK equity. It's being clear about what the UK wants to deliver and how important that is. And sometimes I will go back to the UK and say, does this really matter? Because this will have an impact bilaterally. They will not be happy with it. If it matters, I will go in and have the conversation. If it's discretionary, we need to make a decision, you know, whether we're happy to let this one go because there's a bigger conversation that needs to take place downstream that I need to preserve. So my job, it's like a game of chess to determine whether this move is the important one to make or whether we preserve that move and we because a more important one is coming up. So it's a long game and it's a strategic game. And sometimes we'll step up and we'll say, this really matters. And I will have some very, very difficult conversations that will not go down well. But hopefully, if I've built the right relationships, which I think I have, I'm able to have those conversations in such a way that I can go back in and have another conversation. It's not the door is slammed and, you know, off you go, Vicky. You're not going to darken our doors again. It's a respectful relationship that knows that I'm speaking with the voice of the UK. I'm not speaking with my own voice. So it doesn't matter what I think, ultimately. It matters what the UK thinks. And if the UK cares about it, regardless of whether I've got a close relationship with someone, I have to have that conversation. It's not discretionary. I have to go in and have it. And that's difficult sometimes. It really is. But that's my job. That's diplomacy. On a daily basis, I will say, are you sure? Are you sure you want to do this? And, you know, I will have conversations that, you know, are difficult conversations. And they're really interesting conversations. So you either, you can't be a good neighbour and a bad friend. You have to be one or the other sometimes. So diplomacy is really, defence diplomacy is fascinating. You know, the narrative is, and we're very clear about it, there's no evidence that demonstrates that the UK bases are changing the threat picture to Cyprus, but the reality is, you know, we do a lot from here, so it's difficult.
How did you handle that conversation?
Difficult, with difficulty. I think the reality is, you know, how do you handle that conversation? You have the conversation. I think that's important, the transparency that comes from that. And I have a very trusted relationship with my Cypriot counterpart. So I will, on a fairly regular conversation, speak to the Chief of Defence here, General Sitsikostas, and say, we will have a conversation about it. Or I'll speak to, you know, General Harith Yulio, who is the Defence Minister's sort of Chief of Staff, effectively. And I will say what the UK are doing, because it's important that they know. And we have a no surprises approach here. So we've been very clear that where possible, we will inform them as to what the UK are doing, because it's important that we're respectful to their interests. And if it in any way is domestically going to go down badly, and we do get protests outside the bases, that they understand forewarned is forearmed. And we need to demonstrate why it matters. They need to understand these aren't whims. These are deliberate choices that the UK is making. And when we've declared Cyprus as a global strategic hub, we don't do that to have it, you know, sitting here and not being used. It's here and it's valuable and we use it. But how we use it is important, that we are respectful to that. Because again, if we don't use it properly, then we are open to challenges.
So your posting here is 3 years. You're over halfway. What have been some of those memorable moments?
It's a tough gig, Cyprus. I have to say, it's really, really complex. And it's hard work. It's hard to realise that colonialism and history defines everything we do. That's relentlessly exhausting. But it's a thing. It's a reality. So you have to accept that. You can't, you know, you can't escape that. We genuinely try and be partners with them in a way that is respectful and reliable. So that's been busy, trying to sort of shape that narrative. The small becomes the large very quickly from here, and I think that's really important to understand. It's a double-edged sword. On the one hand, the history is checkered in some Cypriot perspective, but on the other hand, there are a huge amount of people that love the UK and love what we do and love that we're still here. They are very grateful for, you know, what we deliver, and I find that, you know, fulfilling, I guess.
What was the best advice you were given when you took the role?
Best advice? That's an interesting one, Sophie. I think expect the unexpected is key. I think you need to understand that diplomacy is surprising. You never know when you go into a conversation with your bilateral partners how it's going to evolve. So you will go in there with a set of different points that you wish to land on behalf of UK defence, and they will throw something at you that you think, oh, that's really interesting. And you could give your own opinion, but you know you're the UK's perspective. So you've got to be clear in either holding your sacred ground and saying, well, I think the UK would think X, Y, Z, and trying to work out what they mean by the question. So it's not purely, the question is never the question. Underneath it, it's working out, they're watching you to see how you're going to respond, whether you're surprised by that or whether the UK, it's about the sentiment that you wrap whatever the narrative is, and the fact that you will look them in the eye and say, well, the UK cares about that deeply. The UK absolutely would wish to be involved in that. So it's, I think it's a huge responsibility, but one that I don't take lightly. I tread very delicately and sensitively with it, but one that I think is fascinating, to be the custodian of something so important. If this is so important to defence, and my job is in owning that bilateral relationship on behalf of the Chief of Defence Staff, what a responsibility for me in my career to be able to have that opportunity to advocate on behalf of UK Defence and to protect UK Defence interests so that the DA in 30 years' time is still having those conversations. If I get that right and hand over the baton to my successor in a better place, and I do think it is in a better place than when I took it over, then I've been successful.
When you inevitably do your handover, what advice would you give them in a nutshell if they remember one thing that you say to them?
The relationship matters. I think don't take it lightly. I think that's really important. It's incredibly important that we make sure we get that right. It really does matter.
What's one thing that you want people to know about the importance of the relationship between Britain and Cyprus?
I think that it's trusted, it's reliable, it's steadfast. We are not here for our own UK interests. We are here because we see this very much as a global and regional presence. We see this as an important linchpin of our UK defence interests, but also NATO defence interests, of regional interests, and we reassure our partners by being here and how we're able to do that. But I think importantly, we're here because Cyprus matters. You know, Cypriots are really important to the UK, and the relationship has been here for a long time and it will be here for a long time. And I think if we continue to get that right and are respectful, then I think the relationship can only go from strength to strength.
What is the kind of one thing you want to get across?
We're able to cooperate and collaborate now with the Cypriots in a whole host of areas that strengthen their defence capability and enhance ours too. And I think whether we see now we're starting to cooperate in defence procurement in line with the UK growth agenda, which is really important, but also our ability to have interests now that align in the way we share expertise, whether it be air defence, or whether it be a whole host of different areas that multi-domain that we cooperate now with the Cypriots. And I think what's important about that is a lot of that capability that we cooperate with them comes from the bases. So they've recognised that the bases provides a ready capability that they're able to benefit from in terms of expertise and the ability to strengthen the National Guard. And I think that's incredibly important.
News, discussions and analysis. This is SITREP.